I want to talk today about failing. We've been talking about success over the last few weeks, how to have success in 2019, but today I would like to talk about failure because it's the elephant in the room. I mean, you know, if you talk about success, you have to talk about failure, but sometimes failure can control us. You see, if you start moving towards the dreams that God has for you, at some point you will fail. But here's the thing, successful people fail successfully. So I want to look at how you can fail successfully. Does that make sense? Not really. But let's have a look at it and see. See, no one likes to fail. But this morning, I'm going to suggest to you that failure should be your friend, not your enemy. John Maxwell tells us that on average, successful people fail 2 times out of 5, and unsuccessful people fail 3 times out of 5. There's not that big a difference between being successful and unsuccessful in the number of failures. But failure is not something that we like, but we all experience it. And it is not final until you decide it is, until you give up. It can be a learning tool for the wise. You see, everybody fails, not once, but over and over again until the day they die. So why does failure destroy some, but it seems to build others up? It comes down to what we were talking about last week. If you were here last week, we were talking about how to beat giants. And a lot of times, you know, the giant rises up in our way and we are so consumed with the giant, we forget to look to the Lord for the solution. But remember, 1 John 4 verse 4 says this, "He who is in you is greater than the one who is in the world." And we must never forget that. Whenever we face anything, any failure, anything looming up that looks like a big giant in the way, we can look him in the eye and say, "Listen, the one who is in me is greater than the one who is in you." And that's how we can obtain victory. So you see, it's not what you see, it's how you see it. With failure, any sort of failure, it all comes down to perspective. The perspective is what counts. Now, if you've got a Bible, 2 Corinthians 4, verses 8 to 9, this is really interesting. I want to look at Paul because Paul had a really interesting perspective on failure. From the outside looking in, he failed on many levels, but he had an interesting perspective. In 2 Corinthians 4, verse 8, it says this, "We are afflicted in every way, but not crushed. We are perplexed, but not driven to despair. We are persecuted, but not forsaken. We are struck down, but not destroyed." What's he saying? He is saying that no matter what happens, he takes a positive spin on it. He doesn't concentrate on the failure. He looks beyond it. See, for Paul was a guy, if you know anything about the Apostle Paul, he was beaten, he was rejected, he was stoned, shipwrecked, betrayed. But perspective was everything. Even when he faced failure, when he faced defeat, when he faced pain or abuse, when everything seemed to climb up on top of him, he could say this in Romans 8:18, "For I consider that the present sufferings are not worth comparing with the glory that is to be revealed in us." So whatever happened, whatever failure came his way, Paul said, "I'm not going to look at you. I'm going to look beyond that and see the glory that God has for us." You see, it's all about perspective. So what a perspective on what the rest of the world calls failure. I mean, if a guy had been beaten up, rejected, thrown out of town, shipwrecked, stoned, whipped, you'd say, well, the guy's a bit of a failure. I mean, he's not a real roaring success, but in Paul's eyes, it was completely different. Now, Thomas Edison, famously, trying to invent the light globe, is said to have failed 1,000 times. You might have heard that. And one of his workers challenged him. He said, "Well, you've failed to invent the light globe 1,000 times. This is what he said. "I have not failed. I've just found 1,000 ways it won't work." And in the end, of course, he found a way that did work. You see, if you look at it right, a problem is not really your problem. It's your opportunity to shine. And if you have that perspective, suddenly failure comes into the right perspective. You see, Christians should be like tea bags. Our true colour should come out in hot water. When things get tough, Christians should rise above and say, "No, I believe in something beyond this." But if we're honest, many times when failures hit us, when adversity comes against us, we collapse like the rest of the world, don't we? But we should be victorious. So why is it that we don't see failures correctly? Well, the first thing is our past. And we experience you know, all of us, things in our life. And sometimes our past colours the way we see our current problems. If we've failed before, especially if we've failed very publicly before, or if we've failed a lot often before, we can't change our mindset very easily, and so we expect to fail going forward. If we've been successful before, we expect to be successful going forward. Don't believe me? Talk to someone who's trying to give up smoking. You know, it seems to be one of the hardest things in the world to do is to give up smoking, isn't it? Some of you have done it. I say to people, you know, giving up smoking, I talked to a guy, I said, giving up smoking's easy, I do it every day. But that's not really giving it up, you know. But sometimes you just get in this pattern where it's so hard to break because you're just used to failing. So it's time today, I believe, to make the past past at last. Whatever you've done, however you've failed, whatever sin has previously controlled you, take your eyes off that giant and put your eyes on the Lord. So we fix our eyes on Him, the author and perfecter of our faith. Now Isaiah 43 verse 18 to 19, the verse we have on the wall up here, says, forget the former things and do not dwell on the past. See, I'm doing a new thing. Now it springs up. Do you not perceive it? I'm making a way in the desert and streams in the wilderness. Some of us have been in the wilderness for a long time. Some of us have been out there slugging away in the wilderness and it's hard. And the Lord is saying, forget the former things. I'm making a way in the desert. I'm giving you streams. I'm giving you blessings. But you've got to not go back to the other stuff. You've got to not return, forget the former things and move on. So our past can really control how we see things. The second thing is sometimes our present controls it. Sometimes we look at our current circumstances and they convince us that we will fail. Have you ever noticed that? Sometimes you look at life and you go, oh my goodness, how am I ever going to survive this? How are we going to make it? You know, sometimes our circumstances, listen, your circumstances do not determine your destiny, decisions do. You say to people, how's life going? They say, pretty good under the circumstances. You go, what are you doing under there? You should be above the circumstance. You don't want to live under that stuff. But many people do. Whatever giant you face today can and will be subdued and even destroyed if you see him in God's perspective. Let's look at Paul again in Philippians 4, verse 11 through 13. And I love this. This is a guy who really got smashed by life. And he can write this. Listen to this. I have learned in whatever situation I am to be content. I know how to be brought low. I know how to abound. In each and every circumstance, I've learned the secret of facing plenty and hunger, abundance and need. I can do all things through him who strengthens me. We love to quote that verse. I can do all things through him who strengthens me. But look at the context. He's saying, I've learned to, even in the bad times, to do all things through him who strengthens me. Whether I'm abounding or whether I'm abase. Whether I'm on top or whether I'm on the bottom. Whether I'm successful or whether I'm a failure. I have learned. I have learned that I can do all things through him who strengthens me. What a perspective. The third thing that often stops us is our person, our opinion of ourselves. See how you see yourself often determines how you will triumph over failure. If you see yourself as a big person, then you'll take on big problems. If you see yourself as a small person, you're scared to even take on small problems. But failures, if they stop you, they only need to stop you temporarily. Only you can stop you permanently. So how do you see yourself? When you look in the mirror, what do you see? Do you see yourself as successful, pretty, strong, kind, handsome? You know, I'm going to suggest to you today that it's not how you see yourself in the mirror. Why don't you step back and look at yourself how God sees you? See, David was able to do this. He wrote in Psalm 139, verse 13 to 14, listen to this. You formed me in my inward parts. You knitted me together in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. You are not an accident. You are not a failure. God chose you. Yes, you and you and you and you. He chose you from the beginning of time. And his hand was upon you even before you were born. In his power, you can move towards the destiny that he has for you. You are a winner. From the moment you were conceived, you were a winner. And God's hand has been upon you. If you will follow him and let him guide you, You don't have to be fearful of any failure because His hand is upon you. See, if you haven't got God, you haven't got a purpose in your life. It's incredible. If you know the Lord, suddenly life has incredible purpose and meaning. Your perspective changes when you have Christ in your life. But think about this. You might say, yeah, God made me. Yeah, but I'm not that good. Listen to this. The same God who created the universe, everything we see, the mountains, the seas, the valleys, the deserts, the God who spoke and worlds sprang into being, planets and galaxies, and this same God made you. And what's even more, He actually likes you. In fact, He loves you and He has a destiny for you. Isn't that a great perspective? How could you say you're an accident? Oftentimes, you know, kids are introduced, oh, this is our little accident. We didn't expect him. No, he's not. He's not an accident at all. He's not a freak of nature. He is created in the image of God, and God has a plan and a purpose and a destiny for that child, as he has for you. It depends on your perspective. So let's talk about changing perspective. How can we change our perspective? You see, perspective is how we choose to see things, and it's affected by lots of other things around it. That's how perspective is. I'm an optometrist by profession, so I like optical illusions. And the way optical illusions work is we show you something, then we mess with your head by putting all these things around it that change the way you perceive it. I said in the earlier service, I said, Fiona messes with people's heads, but in a different way because she's a counsellor. So, you know, optometrist, counsellor, we mess with people's heads, but it's okay. See, what you see is not always what's real. It's affected by what is happening around it. The world in which we live loves to try and manipulate us and squeeze us into its mold. It wants us, basically, to fail in life. It wants us to aim low. It wants us to follow the trends. It wants us to be part of the masses. That's what the world wants from you. Doesn't want you outstanding, doesn't want you standing up for what's right, doesn't want you making a difference, just wants you to toe the party line. Just float along, have a good life, and when you die, that's it for you. I think we can do better than that, don't you? See, the enemy wants failure to rule your life. He wants your relationships to fail. He wants marriages to fail. He wants kids to stumble into drugs and illicit sex and mess their lives up. And have a look around at the world. He's doing a pretty darn good job, don't you think? You have a look at everybody out there. They are messing their lives up. Some people's lives look like an episode of Home and Away every day. You ever seen Home and Away? I've never actually seen Home and Away. I don't know, some other soap opera. I don't really watch soap operas. But what I know is everything in their life is a drama. And some people live in drama. And if there's no drama in their life, they create drama. Because that's sort of where they're at. I don't want to live that way. You see, people who disobey the one who loves them and lets the devil dictate to them what they should do, they just get squeezed into the mold. They'll say, everyone's doing it, so it should be right. Isn't that right? That doesn't make it right. Romans 12 verse 2 says this, do not be conformed any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Now, many people don't renew their mind. How do you renew your mind? Renewing means to wash it clean. So what you've got to do is take the bad stuff out and put good stuff in. That's why we have the Bible reading plan. I'm saying to you, I'm begging you, please read the Bible every day. Follow that plan. Why? Is it some personal trip for me? No, because I know if you keep putting the Word of God every day into your head, it will eventually make it to your heart and it will change your perspective. It will renew your mind. But if you put junk in your head, if you're watching rubbish on TV or the internet or whatever, that's the stuff that's going to affect your mind. And when that stuff, the bad stuff, gets in your mind, suddenly failure is a big deal. I'm telling you, if you renew your mind, if you put the things of God in your mind, failure will only ever be a comma. It'll never be a full stop. So how do you do that? Philippians 4 verse 8, I love this. This is Paul, the guy who got, you know, beaten and whipped and all that sort of stuff. This is what Paul says. This is how Paul says to renew your mind. Philippians 4:8. Finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence or anything worthy of praise, think about such things. And maybe we should stop and look at what we're putting in our head. Because a lot of the stuff we put in is not all of those great things. It's not commendable, it's not pure, it's not honourable. Television's an interesting thing. Television allows you to be entertained in your own home by people you would never let into your own home. But they come in via this little box and they start, and before long you start thinking like them. That's the power of the media. So what are some of the areas we need to change our perspective in? I want to talk about changing perspective and ask, how can we change our perspective? Let me give you a few suggestions. Number one, look for learning instead of leisure. See, in our modern world, our entire society is on a quest to eliminate and numb pain. We don't like it. We'll do anything we can to avoid it. We'll do whatever it takes to not be in pain. That is like the number one thing in our society. You know, so there's ads on TV for all of the, you know, headache tablets and that sort of stuff. We hate pain. We take pills to numb it. We watch movies to escape it. We get drunk to avoid it and we get high to ignore it. We want a life of leisure with zero pain and zero strain. Leisure is like the big thing, you know. Hey, man, let's have a great life. Let's just relax and have a great life of leisure. But the Bible has a different perspective on pain and leisure. Because in James chapter 1, it says this, count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds. Did that say count it joy when you meet trials? That's exactly what it says. When something comes against you, when you face a failure, when your world is collapsing, the Bible says count it joy. Why? How can it say that? We're all about avoiding pain. What the Bible is saying here is to embrace pain. And then it tells you why. Because, you know, the testing of your faith produces perseverance. And perseverance must have its full effect that you may be mature and complete, lacking in nothing. You see, God knows that if he gives you pain, if he gives you suffering, if he gives you failure, if you treat it the right way, if you see it the right way, it's going to grow something important in you. It's going to change your character. It's going to make you mature and complete. Show me someone who's never had any failures or pain in their life and I'll show you a shallow person. The people I know who are the richest, who are the most mature, the most wise, the most godly people have all suffered in some way. See, growth without pain is an oxymoron. Do you know what an oxymoron is? It's my favorite joke, so I'm going to say it. It is not an idiot with a blowtorch. That's not an oxymoron. An oxymoron means you can't have one without the other. In fact, Benjamin Franklin said, those things that hurt instruct. See, the Bible doesn't call us to kick back, relax and have a comfortable life and then we can all die. The symbol for Christianity is a cross, not a cushion. We're not here to just relax and cruise along and have a great life. James calls us to embrace and be joyful in pain rather than avoiding it, because pain, hurt and even failure can grow fruit that only comes through that, fruit that lasts for eternity. The second thing is to look for holiness instead of happiness. Now, our society is completely obsessed with pursuing happiness. Have you noticed that? It's all about feeling happy. I noticed an advertisement for Hungry Jack's the other day. And they've got, I don't know if you've seen this, but they had like, you know what a Whopper is? They've got like a Whopper with like, and they just keep putting more layers in. And it's so big that this huge Maori guy can't even like get his mouth around it, which is pretty big because he's a big guy. You know, and this is like, if you just have more and more Whopper, you'll be happy. And they're so happy trying to eat this thing. I'm embarrassed trying to eat stuff like that. It finishes up in my lap. But these guys know they're so happy to, because we're all about, in our society, we are all about happiness. We strive for it. We pay for it. Lots of money usually. We seemingly will give up anything in our life to be happy. But listen, fame, fortune, power does not make you happy. It doesn't. Why do so many celebrities take their own life? Because they're miserable, even with all their fame and their fortune. In a secular society, happiness is the aim of living. In a spiritual society, holiness is the name of living. And Australia needs people who will seek holiness, not just happiness. Are you one of them? See, people who stand for right in this corrupt, sin-soaked, depraved world, I believe God is going to raise us up and he will give us grace to face whatever adversity comes down the line. And I am not afraid. When I look at our nation, I am not afraid of what is happening, you know, up in Parliament and all these laws and stuff they're bringing. I'm not afraid of that. I am excited because now for the first time in living memory, the church is different. And we can show them we're different. We can stand for what is right. And some of them will hate us, but we will love them right back, won't we? Because you can't win them over with more hate. You have to love. Our society says it values children. Kids are important. You know, in our society, we want the best education. We want our kids to grow up, and this is, you know, to become successful adults. Our society says we value children. But if you have a look at how we treat kids, that's not true. We've got bunches of kids out there that don't know what sex they want to be. And kids, as they grow older, they're encouraged to try anything and everything. Experiment with sex, experiment with drugs, that's fine. We, ladies and gentlemen, Australia, us murder 70,000 babies in the womb and it's covered by Medicare. We are a crooked and depraved generation. I tell you, this nation needs holiness, ladies and gentlemen, doesn't it? And it needs to start with the house of God. Philippians 2 verse 15 says this, "Be blameless and innocent children of God without blemish in the midst of a crooked and twisted generation among whom you shine as lights in the world." Folks, I believe that if we can get the right perspective on our failure and not have our failures control us, that we can be the ones who will shine in this world. Do I hear an amen to that? We can make a difference. See, today God is calling you to shine, to be holy and not just try and pursue happiness, but pursue holiness. The third thing is we tend to look for solutions instead of sympathy. Now, this is very much our society. So many in our society, they accept failure because they would rather have sympathy than solutions. That's what we're like. Australia is a society of victims, and our bad behavior and poor decisions are excused away by a victim mentality. You go into the courts, you'll see crimes, abuses, anger and selfishness, and it's all put down to tough upbringing and the wrong influences and substance abuse and all that sort of stuff. Now, I know that these things affect the way you think, but I think it's time for us to put that aside and own up, don't you? As a society. I remember one of my daughters at the age of 3, I remember this very well. We had Easter and we loved Easter. We bought them all Easter eggs. Christmas time. We bought them all Easter eggs and we got up one morning and here was this little 3-year-old girl sitting in a sea of chocolate all over her face and there was foil everywhere. And she was sitting there with her little dog and chocolate all over her face and she looked up and she said, my naughty doll did this. And we went, okay. See, even at 3 years of age, she's shifting blame already. Don't blame me. I have chocolate here, but don't blame me because it's all my doll's fault. Naughty dolls. Right from the start, we like to blame other people. Listen, I understand that things affect you. They can affect your past, can come through and affect the way you think. I understand that. But at some point, you've got to stop seeing yourself as a victim and see yourself as a victor. Victims blame others. Victors accept responsibility and learn. Now, the Bible says this. Again, Paul, Romans 8, verse 37 to 39 says this, "In all these things we are more than conquerors through him who loved us." We are more than conquerors. We are more than conquerors. "For I am sure that neither death nor life, neither angels nor rulers, nor things present nor things to come, nor powers nor height nor depth nor anything else in all creation will be able to separate us from the love of God." And what he's saying there is, I know that no matter what I see, that God has a greater perspective. And that my failures and my shortcomings of this, I don't care about this stuff because I'm a conqueror. See, victims are always looking for sympathy. They're always looking for someone else to blame. How often do you see it? I talk to people all the time. People go out, right? They make bad decisions, really bad decisions sometimes. And they pursue their own selfish desires. They do things their own way, and then when it all falls apart, they blame God. They never listened to him, they never obeyed him, they never did what he said, but they blame him when everything goes, God hates me. This is all God's fault. Really? Have a look at yourself. You can't absolve yourself from blame. Listen to what Proverbs 19 says. Proverbs 19 verse 3. When a man's folly brings his way to ruin, his heart rages against the Lord. This is not a new phenomenon. This is not a 21st century phenomenon that everybody blames God. This has been happening since creation. At the fall, Adam was challenged by God. Adam blamed Eve. Eve blamed the snake. Snake didn't have a leg to stand on. Down the pile. You know, it's the way it works. We have always blamed somebody else. But I believe that victors don't look to blame someone else. They don't look for sympathy. They don't look for reasons why and excuses. They own up and they say, yes, I'm guilty. It's a failure. And you know, if you live as a victor, you can win because you have the power of the Holy Spirit flowing through you to conquer failure in life. So let me talk about failure as a friend, because I said it before, I think failure needs to be your friend, not your enemy. And what you focus on determines your success and failure. Now, last week, we mentioned this. I put up a photograph of Kurt Vollander, who was a world-famous tightrope walker, seconds before he died. He plunged to his death 75 meters. He had a tightrope between these two buildings, and he plunged to his death because he never wore any safety stuff, 75 meters. Now, his wife said afterwards that he was so focused on not falling that he fell. For the first time in his career, instead of being focused on walking the tightrope, he was focused on not falling. She said that was the difference leading into this particular walk. And so often, if you treat failure as your foe, not only do you take every mistake so seriously, but you will collapse under the anxiety. And very often, whatever you concentrate on is how you're going to fall. Remember, successful people fail 2 times out of 5 and unsuccessful only 3 times out of 5. You're going to fail, but it needs to be your friend. So if you see failure as your friend, you can react positively to it. You can be honest and open about your mistakes, and you can learn from your failures. Seems a shame to waste it, doesn't it? Would you like to have all these failures and say, oh, well, blew it? Why not learn from it? Seriously, Psalm 37, verse 23, 24, the steps of a good man are ordered by the Lord, and he delights in his ways. Though he fall, he shall not be cast down, because the Lord upholds him with his hand. You see, a good man learns from his mistakes. A good man faces his failures, recognizes those, and says, okay, I can learn from this. Now, I stand before you. I have made thousands of mistakes in my life. Have you? Good, I'm not the only one. I was worried there for a minute. I've failed in so many ways. But I'm a tenacious sod and I don't like to give up easily. If you know anything of our history, Fiona and I worked very hard for more than a decade. We accumulated a lot of money and someone convinced us to put it with a mob called Storm Financial, and we lost the lot in a month, including our home. Everything we had, everything we'd worked for, gone in a heartbeat. Now, while others in that group collapsed, they gave up, they got divorced. Some people actually took their own life. They were so devastated by this financial loss. Fiona and I decided that we would trust God to restore our fortune, and he's doing that this day. And I've got to tell you, it is the most expensive education that I've had. It was really expensive. But I'm trusting God for restoration, and he's doing it. I'm seeing it every day. Because failure is not permanent. It's a comma. It's not a full stop. It's just an expensive education. So if you've failed, stop feeling like a victim and start feeling like a victor. Start changing how you see yourself, your failures, and God, and realize that failure is not final. It is a setback. But listen, a setback, let me put you this way. A setback is just a setup for a comeback. A setback is just a setup for a comeback. So how you see your failure, the failure you've suffered recently or in the past, how do you see it in the right way? How do you make your setback become a setup for a comeback? Well, the first thing is, see failure as a moment in time. Now, failure needs to be but a moment in time, not a monument that you bow before for the rest of your life. Listen to me here. This is important. Failure is a moment in time. When it's past, it's past. Don't build a monument and bow down to it for the rest of your life. People do, though. They build monuments to failure all the time. And they inscribe words around the base of the monument, words like I tried, but it didn't work. Words like, they said it couldn't be done and they were right. Well, people are like that with Christianity. So I talk to people, what about coming to Jesus? They say, oh yeah, I tried that, it didn't work. Really? I tried it once, it didn't work. Well, it's like a grown man. So can you imagine me at my age saying, yeah, I don't walk. I tried that when I was 2 and I fell over. Didn't like it. That's about as ridiculous as saying I tried Christianity. Keep trying. You know, it could have been the wrong church, the wrong decision. Who knows? But if you keep trying, you and I know, those of us who know the Lord know, he comes through for you. Don't try once and say, I'm done. I tried walking once. I didn't like it, so I gave up. Anything worthwhile in life takes a decision to try and to keep on trying. Don't fall apart at the first hurdle. Failure is giving up. Building that monument and staying there for the rest of your life and paying homage to it. You can spend your whole life bowing down to a monument to your own failure. People do it all the time. They do. People have had a failed business their whole life. They just, oh yeah, but I tried that and I was in business, you know. Or they say things like, I wished I'd never done that. How many people spend their whole lives wishing that they'd never done something? Is that you? Have you ever thought that, gee, I wish I'd never done that? Hindsight is 20/20 vision. You look back, you seem to see it all fairly clearly. But at the time, you don't. A lot of the bad decisions we make, we wish we'd never made. You know, I wished I'd never married him. Some of you ladies might have said that. You know, I wished I'd never invested in that. I wished I'd never done that. Look, wishing is not going to get you anywhere. That's just something you're inscribing on a monument that you are worshipping. People often write things on their monument like, it's the way I am, I can't change. That's never true, is it? Even older people can change. They say you can't teach an old dog new tricks. You can. I reckon so. You only stop changing when you decide you ain't changing no more. That's the only time it happens. So you can change. You can improve. People who build great monuments to failure in their life often refuse to take the blame for its construction. They blame everybody. It's the reason this monument is here is because, you know, this was done to me. And that victim mentality is back there again. Proverbs 26 verse 16 says this, for the righteous falls 7 times, then rises again. But the wicked stumble in times of calamity. The righteous fall and rise up again, but the wicked stumble. And some of you here might have stumbled. You might have fallen. But I'm telling you now, be a victor, not a victim. And get up and keep going, because failure is never permanent until you decide it is. See, the righteous fall, but they know that failure is just a moment. They don't build a monument to it. It's a moment. You know, shake the dust off and move on. Abraham Lincoln once wisely said, my great concern is not whether you have failed, but whether you are content with your failure. Are you content with your failure? The second thing is, you need to see failure as internal and not final. Now, many people see failure as something outward, something others would judge them by. But hey, we all fail. We don't need to trumpet those. Many failures are very internal. You wouldn't judge a cake until it was cooked, would you? I wouldn't. Imagine sitting there and sticking your finger in the egg and saying, oh, I don't like that. That's a lousy cake. You haven't even cooked it yet. Judge it when it's done, not when it's being made. You know, some failure is not for public consumption. Remember Thomas Edison? He failed 1,000 times before he invented the light globe. But he didn't trumpet every failure he had. Well, I found out that doesn't work. That's 874. You know, he didn't do that. Some failures you just got to keep to yourself for a while. Now, you might share it with a friend for support or whatever, but don't shout it from the rooftops, because many failures should be internal. Now, you have a look at some Bible characters. The one I like is Gideon. Gideon had failures. He was from the lowest clan, the lowest tribe in Israel, and he was so scared of the Amalekites, he was threshing grain, which he needed to do, in a wine press. If you know anything about threshing, you're supposed to throw it in the air and the wind blows through it. How much wind do you get in a hole? Not a lot, but he was doing it because he was so scared of the Amalekites. And then an angel appeared to him, and the angel said in Judges 6:12, the Lord is with you, O mighty man of valor. Here he is, sitting in a wide press going, I hope they don't see me. And an angel appears and says, you're a mighty man of valor. Did God get it wrong? Was the angel mistaken? Was the angel looking over the winepress to someone over there who was a mighty man of valor? No, of course he wasn't. God said that to Gideon because God saw his ultimate success, not the failure he was. God's perspective was he could see the long game here. And when Gideon went public, man, he blew people away. He was a phenomenal success as a leader of Israel, as a judge. So lots of people have lived through this. Consider the record producer who told the Beatles that four-piece bands were out of vogue. No one's listening to four-piece bands anymore. And he rejected the Beatles, signing the Beatles. Good one. How about the guy who scratched, the Hollywood producer who scratched Reject across a screenplay of Gone with the Wind? How about Mr. Roebuck? You don't know who Mr. Roebuck is, but there was originally a department store in the US called Sears Roebuck. It's a big department store now, but back in the day, Roebuck thought it wasn't going to work. So he went to Sears and he said, buy me out for $25,000. And he sold his interest in the company for $25,000. Now Sears sells $25,000 worth of goods every 16 seconds. Whoops. See, fail. If you're going to fail, fail quietly, but keep going. Because, you know, when you start judging yourself and your life and everything by the half-baked version, you don't see success. You've got to see things God's way as he saw it with Gideon. And the third thing is to see failure as a teacher. You see, failure is not a stone wall that you have to climb. It's a stepping stone to greatness. Most biblical heroes failed at some point, but they didn't stay there. We were studying in our Bible reading plan this week. We did Psalm 23. Who likes Psalm 23? The shepherd psalm. Isn't it beautiful? And it says, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. You notice what he says? I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. He doesn't say I camp there. He doesn't say I set up shop. He doesn't say I build a monument there. He says I walk through it. And sometimes when you're facing failure, when you're facing difficulty in your life, in your marriage, in your business, whatever, you have to keep walking. Don't camp there. Don't give up and say, oh, well, this is as good as it gets. Galatians 6:9 says this, and let us not grow weary of doing good, for in due season we will reap if we do not give up. And so many of us, folks, we have the victim mentality. We say, oh, well, this is life for me. It's as good as it. You'll never get better than this. No. I don't believe that. I believe that God has a plan and a destiny for every single one of you. And if you sit around and feel like a victim and build a monument, you're not going to see his plan and destiny roll out before you. But if you walk with him, if you keep going through the valley of the shadow of death, instead of camping there, he will have a great and wonderful future for you. You will reap rewards, including wisdom, including moving into your destiny, if you keep going. You see, your failures are stepping stones, not barriers. You should see your failures as the rung on the ladder to your dreams, because God has those great dreams for you. So you have to become a successful failure. Let me wrap it up with this. A farmer had a mule, and the mule fell into a pit, and he could not get the mule out of the pit. So he thought, oh, well, I'll just bury him. So he started throwing dirt on top of the mule, and the mule shook it off and trotted down, threw a bit more dirt on, shook it off, trotted down, and this went on and on. And in the end, the mule stepped out of the hole. You see, what was intended to bury him became his ultimate salvation. Failure is only failure when you give up. If you keep going and see failure as a friend instead of an enemy, you will reap a reward in due time. Now, one of my great sins in life is I do love the Rocky movies because they're very cool. And I just remember, you know, in Rocky 1, Sylvester Stallone coming over to the ropes and saying to his trainer, I ain't going down no more. Which translated means, I ain't going down no more. See, he'd been down on the canvas. He picks himself up and there's blood and sort of, you know, snot everywhere. It's pretty ugly. But he said, I'm not going down anymore. And that was when he made a decision to go up there and he won the fight. See, I love that. Because I don't know about you, if you're facing failure now, if you've got a failure in your past that just seems to follow you around, it's time that you look at that failure, look at that giant and say, I ain't going down no more. I'm going to triumph over you. I'm going to win. Tom Watson Sr., who founded IBM, had a top junior executive who spent $12 million of the company's money on a business experiment that failed. So the young executive turned up at Watson's desk with his resignation saying, I'm sure you want my resignation. And Watson said this, I love it. No, I don't want your resignation. I've just spent $12 million educating you. It's about time you went back to work. Isn't that cool? See, today some of you are here, you're haunted by a failure in your past. It could be a failed business, could be a failed marriage, could be a failed relationship, could be failure with your children, could be failure on a whole bunch of different levels. But I promise you, God is in the business of restoration. God, he says in Joel 2:25, I will restore to you the years the locusts have eaten. And that promise holds true today. He can restore to you the years that have flown through your fingers. What does restoration mean? It means it makes it like the years of neglect never happened. When Rod restores a car, he makes it as if it just rolled off the showroom floor. It's as if the years of neglect never happened because it's been restored. And the Bible says there, I will restore to you the years the locusts have eaten. Locusts are like, you know, we have a few locusts here in Australia. They eat everything. Everything that is green, everything that is living, a locust will eat. It's like a teenage boy. They just eat and eat and eat. You can't switch them off. You can't satisfy them. It's like a bottomless pit. And so there's parts of your life, there's failures in your life that have eaten you up from the inside. And today the Lord is saying, I will restore to you the years the locusts have eaten. So today is the day that we change how we see failure and we pick ourselves up and we start again. Today is the day when we look at that failure and we say, I ain't going down no more. I ain't going down no more. And we take our eyes off that giant and put it on the Lord. If your life has been significantly affected by failure, it's time to start failing successfully. Remember, successful people fail 2 out of 5 times. Unsuccessful 3 out of 5 times. It's not about how many times you fail. It's not about how many times that failure affects you. It's about making failure a moment in the past, not a monument to the future. It's about putting that aside and saying, no matter how many times I go down, I ain't going down no more. That's what the Lord's saying to us this morning. Would you bow your head?